Chapter 17. Throughout the last 3 days, during which events had crashed down on his family like rocks, Nikolka had had one cherished aim in life, an aim connected with the mysterious final words uttered by the man stretched out in the snow. This aim he had now achieved, but in order for it to be realized, he had had to dash about the city before the start of the parade, visiting no fewer than 9 addresses. And although while he was rushing about, he lost heart in the whole enterprise many, many times, each time he picked himself up and carried on, finally achieving what he had set out to do. In a small house on the very edge of the city, on Litovskaya Street, he managed to locate someone who had served in the second company of their detachment, and to find out Naitur's address, first name, and patronymic. For 2 hours, Nikolka tried to battle his way through the stormy waves of people in an attempt to get across St. Sophia Square. But it had proved quite impossible to cross the square, out of the question. So the frozen Nikolka had spent about another half hour freeing himself from the claws of the crowd in order to return to his starting point, Mikhailovsky Monastery. Then he had the plan of going down Kostelnaya Street, after which, with a big detour, he could carry on down to the Kreschatik and from there make his way onto Maloprovalnia Street, along the low-lying back alleyways. But that turned out to be impossible as well. As with everywhere in the city, dense columns of troops were snaking up Kostelnaya Street on their way to join the parade. So he took an even longer and more circuitous route, and found himself totally alone on Vladimir Hill. He ran along the park terraces and avenues, making his way between the walls of white snow, finding himself at times in sections of the park where the snow wasn't so deep. From the terraces, he could look across the ocean of snow to the Imperial Park on the opposite hills, and then farther to the left to the unending Chernigov plains stretching away in utter winter stillness beyond the Dnieper, lying white and proud in its icy banks. Everything was utterly peaceful and still, but at that moment Nikolka had no time for peace or stillness. Fighting his way through the snow, he climbed up one terrace after another, occasionally noting with some astonishment that here and there were tracks in the snow. People clearly ventured onto the hill, even in the middle of winter. Finally, he was able to make his way down an avenue where, with a sigh of relief, he saw that there were no troops on the Kreschatik, and he made straight for the cherished spot, number 21 Maloprovalnaya Street. This was the address he was looking for, an unwritten address that had become firmly lodged in his brain. Nikolka felt both excited and shy. "Who shall I ask, and how best to put it? I'm in the dark here." He rang the doorbell of an annex nestling at the bottom of a garden terrace. For a long time, nobody came to the door, but finally he could hear the sound of shuffling footsteps, and the door was opened a fraction on a chain. A woman's face in a pince-nez peered round the door.
"What is it?"
she asked abruptly from the gloom of the hallway. "Can you tell me, please, does the Naitur's family live here?" The woman's face adopted a completely unwelcoming expression, and her pince-nez glittered at him hostilely.
"There's nobody called Tours here," she said in a low voice.
Nikolka blushed. He felt embarrassed and sad. "This is apartment number 5.
"Well, yes," the woman answered reluctantly and suspiciously. "Tell me what it is you want."
"I was told that the Tours family lives here." More of the woman's face emerged from behind the door, and she took a quick glance around the garden to see if there was anybody with Nikolka. She was so close, he could clearly see her full double chin.
"Yes, but tell me what it is you want."
Nikolka sighed, and glancing behind him, said,
"I've come here about Felix Felixovich. I have some information about him."
The expression on the woman's face changed abruptly.
"And you are?"
"A student."
"Wait here a moment,"
she said, and slammed the door. The footsteps died away. A minute and a half later, the click of heels could be heard as someone approached the door. The door opened wide, and Nikolka was able to go in. The hallway was illuminated with light coming from the sitting room, and Nikolka was able to see the side of a comfortable armchair, and then the woman in the pince-nez. He took off his cap,
and suddenly saw another woman standing in front of him. She was small and thin, bearing traces of a faded beauty on her face. Indefinite, insignificant signs, her forehead possibly, or the color of her hair, gave Nikolka to understand that she was Nye's mother. And he was horrified, wondering how he would be able to break the news. When the woman looked at him steadily, her eyes bright with curiosity, he found himself at even more of a loss. There was someone else standing next to her, a younger woman, also seemingly with Nye's features.
"Well then, what is it you have to tell us?"
the mother asked insistently. Nikolka clutched at his cap, looked at her and said,
I...
The thin lady, the mother, gave him an angry, apparently hostile look, and suddenly yelled so loudly that the glass in the door behind him shook.
"Felix has been killed!"
She clenched her fists, waving them in front of Nikolka's face, and shouted,
"He's been killed! Did you hear that, Irina? Felix has been killed!"
Nikolka's eyes glazed over with fear.
"My God, I haven't even said anything yet,"
he thought despairingly. The large lady in the pince-nez quickly shut the door behind Nikolka and ran up to the mother, seized her by the shoulders, and whispered,
"Shh, Maria Frantsevna, my dear, shh."
Then, bending close to Nikolka, she asked,
"Perhaps it's not true. Oh, Lord, please tell us, is it really true?"
But he was unable to say anything. He simply looked ahead of him in despair, aware once more of the side of the armchair.
"Shh, Maria Frantsevna, shh, my dear, they'll hear us, for goodness sake. It is the will of God,"
the large woman babbled. Nytours's mother collapsed onto the floor on her back, shouting,
Four years I've been waiting and waiting."
The younger woman, standing behind Nikolka, quickly went over to her mother and helped her up from the floor. Nikolka wanted to help her, but he unaccountably suddenly broke into a fit of sobbing, unable to stop. The curtains had been drawn across the windows, and the room lay in semi-gloom. There was utter silence in the room, pervaded by the unpleasant smell of medicine. Eventually, the silence was broken by the younger woman, clearly Nye's sister. She turned away from the window and went up to Nikolka. He got up from the armchair, still clutching his cap, which he had found impossible to put down in such terrible circumstances. Absent-mindedly smoothing down a lock of her dark hair, Nye's sister asked, her mouth contorted with sorrow,
"How did he die?"
"He died," Nikolka answered, summoning up his most natural voice. "He died. I'd like you to know that he died the death of a hero. A real hero. He'd sent away all his cadets in good time at the very last moment, but he himself stayed where he was and covered their retreat with rifle fire."
All the time he was telling them this, Nikolka was in tears.
"We came under machine gun fire, and I was nearly killed as well," he continued, still crying. "There were only the two of us left, and he shouted at me, trying to drive me away, firing from his machine gun. The enemy's cavalry was coming at us from every angle. We had fallen into a trap, literally from every angle."
"But perhaps he was just wounded."
"No,"
he answered firmly, wiping his eyes, nose, and mouth with a dirty handkerchief.
"No, he was killed. I was able to feel him. He had been hit in the head and chest."
The room became even darker. Maria Frantsevna had fallen silent, and there was no sound coming from the next room. The three of them remained in the sitting room, huddling together and whispering to each other. Nye's sister, Irina, the large lady in the pince-nez, Lydia Pavlovna — Nikolka had learned that she was the landlady of the apartment — and Nikolka himself.
"I don't have any money with me," he whispered, "but if necessary, I can go and get some straight away, and then we can set off."
"I can give you some money immediately," Lydia Pavlovna boomed. "The money's not important, but just make sure you're successful. Irina, you mustn't say a word to her about any of this. I really don't know what to do."
"I'll go with him," whispered Irina, "and we will be successful. Why don't you just tell her that his body is lying in the barracks, and that we need permission to see him?
Yes, yes, that's a good idea.
The large lady crept quietly into the next room, where her voice could be heard whispering reassuringly.
Come now, Maria Francevna, why don't you lie down, for the love of Christ? They're going right now to sort everything out. That cadet said he was lying in some barracks.
What? On bare boards?
She asked in a resonant and still hostile, or so it seemed to Nikolka, voice.
No, no, Maria Francevna, he's in a chapel, a chapel.
Perhaps he's still lying on those crossroads, with dogs gnawing at his body.
Maria Francevna, please don't say such things. Just try to stay calm, I beg you.
Mama has not been her normal self these last 3 days, Nye's sister whispered, again smoothing back the lock of hair on her forehead. Her eyes focused on a distant spot, somewhere beyond Nikolka.
But now, everything else has become unimportant.
I'm going with them,
they heard from the next room. Nye's sister jumped up and ran through to the next room.
Mama, you're not going with them, you're not. The cadet will refuse to help us if you go. He could be arrested. Just stay there where you are, I beg you.
Oh, Irina, Irina,
the mother continued,
he's been killed. And what are you doing about it? Tell me what. And what will I do now that Felix has been killed? Killed? Lying in the snow? Just think.
And she burst out sobbing again, with the bed creaking beneath her. Then the voice of the landlady could be heard.
Maria Francevna, my darling, try to be brave.
Oh, Lord! Oh, my God!
Cried Nye's sister, running quickly through the sitting room. Nikolka sat there, wrapped in horror and despair.
What if we don't find him? He thought. What then?
Nikolka stopped outside the most horrible doorway of all. Despite the frost, the most terrible foul stench was coming through the doors.
Perhaps you should wait here, he said to Irina. There's such a foul smell through there, you'll probably feel ill.
Irina looked at the green door, then at Nikolka.
No, she answered. I'm coming with you.
Nikolka pulled the handle of the heavy door, and they went in. At first, everything was completely dark. Then they gradually began to make out endless rows of empty coat hooks, lit dimly by a ceiling lamp. Nikolka turned anxiously to look at his companion, but she seemed to be all right, walking along next to him. It was just that her face was pale, and she was frowning. She was frowning in a way that reminded him of Nye Tours. The similarity was only passing. Nye had had a straightforward, masculine face, as if sculpted in metal, whereas she was a beautiful woman, cast more, perhaps, in the foreign mold rather than the Russian. An astonishing, extraordinary young woman. The smell, whose effect on Irina Nikolka had so feared, was everywhere. Everything smelled. The floors, the walls, the wooden coat hooks. The stench was so terrible that you could even see it. The walls seemed thick and sticky with grease. The coat hooks were glistening, and everywhere there was the stench of rotting flesh. Although you could very quickly get used to the smell, it was better not to look at anything, or indeed think about anything. That was the most important thing, not to think. Otherwise you would realize what the smell signified. There was a brief glimpse of a medical student in a coat, then he was gone. Beyond the coat hooks on the left, a door creaked open, and someone in boots emerged. Nikolka looked at him, and then quickly averted his gaze to avoid looking too closely at his jacket. The jacket, as well as the man's hands, were glistening like one of the coat hooks.
What do you want?
The man asked brusquely.
We've come on a matter that... We really need to see the person in charge here, Nikolka said. We need to find a particular person who's been killed. Could he be here, do you think?
Who is this person? The man asked mistrustfully.
He was killed here on a city street 3 days ago.
Ah, I see. A cadet or an officer? Caught by the Cossacks? What was he exactly?
Not wanting to say that Nye Tours was an officer, Nikolka simply said,
Well, yes, he was killed, too.
He was an officer, mobilized by the Hetman, Irina said, going up to the man.
Nye Tours.
Clearly uninterested in who Nye Tours might have been,
The man gave Irina a sideways glance and answered her, coughing and spitting on the floor.
I don't really know what I can do.
It's past working hours now and there's nobody here. The other janitors have gone home. It will be difficult to find him. Very difficult. The bodies have been taken down to the cellars. Difficult. Very difficult. Irina Nye undid her bag, took out a banknote, and held it out to the janitor. Nikolka turned away, afraid that if the man were honest, he would demur. But he accepted the money.
Thank you, miss, said the janitor, clearly much more cheerful now. We'll be able to find him. We'll just need permission. If the professor agrees, you can pick up the body.
But where is the professor? Nikolka asked.
He's here, but he's busy. I don't know. Should I tell him you're here?
Yes, yes, please tell him at once, Nikolka said. I'll be able to recognize the dead man immediately.
I can do that for you, the janitor said, and led them up some steps and into a corridor where the stench was even more unbearable.
Then along the corridor, then left into another corridor, where the smell was less intense and where it was a little lighter because of the glass ceiling. Here, the doors on both sides of the corridor were painted white. The janitor stopped at one of these doors and knocked. Then, removing his cap, he went in. The corridor was quite quiet, and light filtered through the roof. In a distant corner of the corridor, it was beginning to grow dark. The janitor came out and said,
Come this way.
Nikolka went in, followed by Irina. He took off his cap. Looking around the huge room, he was struck first of all by the black stains on the glistening curtains and the patch of intensely bright light falling onto the table, illuminating a black beard, a haggard wrinkled face, and a hooked nose. Finding all this depressing, he looked round at the walls. Endless rows of shelves gleamed in the semi-gloom, and he could just make out monstrous-looking objects, dark and yellow, like fearsome Chinese. A little farther off, he saw a tall man in a priest-like leather apron and black gloves. He was bending down over a long table, on which stood a row of microscopes, like cannon, their mirrors gleaming white and gold in the light of a low lamp under a green shade.
What do you want?
Asked the professor. Nikolka realized that the man with the beard and the haggard face must be the professor, and that the other, smaller man in the leather apron was an assistant. Nikolka coughed, his eyes fixed on the brilliant patch of light emanating from the strangely curved lamp, on the tobacco-stained fingers, and on the terrible, revolting-looking object lying in front of the professor. Someone's neck and chin, consisting of veins and tendons, pierced and threaded through with scores of gleaming hooks and scissors.
Are you relatives? Asked the professor.
His voice sounded dull and muffled, a voice that corresponded to his lined face and his beard. He looked up and peered at Irina Nye and at her fur coat and boots.
I'm his sister, she replied, trying not to look at the object lying in front of the professor.
You see, Sergei Nikolaevich, how difficult this all is. This isn't the first time. Anyway, it's possible he's not here anymore. Have the bodies been taken to the general mortuary?
Possibly,
the tall man replied, tossing an instrument to one side.
Fyodor!
Shouted the professor.
No, you go that way. You mustn't come this way. I'll go myself, Nikolka said shyly.
It's not really for you, miss, the janitor agreed. Why don't you wait here? He added.
Nikolka took the janitor to one side, gave him two more banknotes, and asked him to find her a clean chair to sit on. The janitor, puffing away at his pipe with its homemade tobacco, produced a chair from a small room with a green lamp and some skeletons.
You're not a doctor, are you, sir? Doctors get used to all this straight away, said the janitor, opening a large door and switching on a light on the glass ceiling.
There was a strong smell in the room, containing row upon row of gleaming zinc tables. They were empty. Somewhere, a tap was dripping into a sink. The stone floor rang under their feet. Finding it difficult to cope with the smell that no doubt must have always pervaded the room, Nikolka walked along, trying to keep his mind a blank. He followed the janitor through the doors at the other end into a totally dark corridor. Here, the janitor lit a small lamp, and they went on a little farther. The janitor threw back a heavy bolt, opened a metal door, and again flicked a switch. In the corners of the room stood huge cylinders, reaching up towards the ceiling and bulging with lumps and pieces of human flesh, strips of skin, fingers, and fragments of shattered bones. Nikolka swallowed hard and averted his eyes.
"Take a sniff of this, sir," said the janitor.
Nikolka closed his eyes and eagerly inhaled a lungful of unbearably strong sal ammoniac from a bottle. As if half asleep and screwing up his eyes, Nikolka was aware of Fyodor's glowing pipe and the sweet smell of cheap tobacco. After fiddling for a long time with the lock of the lift door, Fyodor managed to open it, and they took their places on the lift platform. Fyodor pulled a handle, and the lift started to descend, creaking as it went. Down below, they were met by a blast of icy cold air. The lift came to a halt. They went into a huge mortuary. Nikolka could dimly make out something that he had never seen before in his life. Row upon row of naked human corpses, lying one next to the other like stacks of wood, emitting an unbearable stench in spite of the sal ammoniac. Particularly noticeable were the protruding soles of their feet, some rigid, some flopping sideways. The hair on women's heads was fluffed up and disheveled, and their breasts were crushed, creased, and bruised.
"I'll turn them over now, and you'll be able to see," the janitor said, bending over the first corpse.
He grabbed hold of a woman's foot, and she flopped onto the floor as if on oil. She seemed horribly beautiful to Nikolka, lying there glistening like a witch. Her eyes were wide open, and she seemed to be looking straight at Fyodor. Nikolka managed only with some difficulty to take his eyes away from the scar encircling her body like a red ribbon, and to look elsewhere. He felt quite sick, and his head spun at the thought they would have to be turning over all these sticky, slippery bodies.
"Wait, there's no need to go on,"
he said feebly to Fyodor, putting the bottle of sal ammoniac in his pocket.
"There he is. I've found him. Up there. There."
Balancing carefully so as not to slip onto the floor, Fyodor immediately climbed up, grabbed Nytur's by the head, and gave it a sharp tug. A flat-chested, broad-hipped woman lay on Nye's stomach, a cheap little comb on the back of her hair gleaming dully like a fragment of broken glass. In a single easy movement, Fyodor pulled the comb out and dropped it into the pocket of his apron. Then he gripped Nye under the arms and pulled him out from the general pile. Nye's head lolled back, his sharp, unshaven chin pointing upwards, and one hand flopped down towards the ground. Fyodor didn't drop Nye casually onto the ground, as he had the woman, but, holding him under his arms and bending his now slack body, turned him to face Nikolka, his feet touching the floor.
"Take a good look," he said. "Is this the one? We don't want to make a mistake."
Nikolka looked Nye straight in the eyes. Nye's wide-open eyes looked back at Nikolka with a glassy, uncomprehending stare. On his left cheek, there was a barely perceptible touch of green, and there were large stains, probably of congealed blood, marking his chest and stomach.
"Yes, it's him," said Nikolka.
Continuing to hold Nye under the arms, Fyodor dragged him onto the lift platform and laid him down at Nikolka's feet. The corpse lay there, its arms flung out wide and its chin pointing upwards. Fyodor got onto the lift, pulled the lever, and they started to move back up. That evening in the chapel, all Nikolka's wishes were fulfilled, and although he still felt unbearably sad, his conscience was completely calm. The light was turned on in the bare, gloomy chapel attached to the anatomical theatre. In the corner of the room, the lid had been placed on the coffin of some unknown person, so that such an unpleasant neighbour should not disturb Nye's peace and calm. It even seemed that Nye himself started to look out at the world from his coffin with a more cheerful expression. Nye's body had been washed by the good-humoured and talkative attendants. He was now clean and wearing his army coat without epaulettes, with a wreath on his brow and with three candles at the head of his coffin, and, most importantly of all, with his colourful ribbon of St. George, which Nikolka had himself placed onto his cold and clammy chest under his shirt. Seeing the three candles, Nye's old mother turned her trembling head towards Nikolka and said,
"That is my son. Thank you."
When he heard this, Nikolka burst into tears again and went out of the chapel into the snow. All around him, above the yard of the anatomical theatre, lay the night and the snow, and overhead, the Milky Way and the stars, like crosses.